This is a new dimension in sound.
You're listening to TalkZone.com, Internet Talk Radio.
TalkZone.com.
It's time for the race report. Your full speed hour of NASCAR news and talk.
Yo, we didn't have much of a choice because we thought we were going to blow up.
Here are your hosts, Steve Barker.
I'm the best there is. Nobody can hang with my stuff.
And Sam Atwell.
You know, I'm just a big, hairy American winning machine.
Ready to talk NASCAR on the race report.
Now Tony is one lap away from getting his fourth win of the year. That's the margin, 6/10 of a second. Tony Stewart trying to hold off Jeff Gordon. Two turns away for Tony Stewart, the 38-year-old two-time champion coming out of turn four. And Tony Stewart will win it at Kansas Speedway.
Dr. Jerry Punch with a call on ABC of Tony Stewart's win at Kansas. Welcome to the Race Report. I'm Steve Parker.
And I'm Sam Atwell.
Tony's fourth victory this season puts him right back into championship contention. Jimmy and Mark were almost cheating, and regular start times for all the races. Let's talk some NASCAR on the Race Report.
Now with a look at this week's NASCAR news, here's Steve with the racing headlines.
Sunday at Kansas Speedway, crew chief Darian Grubb made the call to put only right side tires on the car of Tony Stewart during a pit stop with 28 laps to go. It was the right call as Stewart was able to hold off Jeff Gordon, who had taken four tires, to win the Price Chopper 400. Stewart's fourth win of the season and second career victory at Kansas. Behind Gordon, Greg Biffle, Juan Montoya, and Denny Hamlin were the rest of the top five. The victory allows Stewart to jump over Kurt Busch into fourth place in the standings, 67 points behind leader Mark Martin. After his seventh place finish, Mark does hold on to an 18-point lead over Jimmy Johnson, who finished ninth. Montoya's third, 51 points back, then Stewart and Busch. Denny Hamlin in sixth place, the final driver within 100 points of the lead. He's 99 points behind Mark Martin. Even with his second place finish, Gordon is still 103 points back with seven races left to go. This weekend, it's on to Auto Club Speedway in Fontana, California for the Pepsi 500. Green flag scheduled for about 3:15 Eastern time on Sunday. This week, NASCAR announced they will go to uniform start times for races beginning next season. Now, races in the eastern and central regions of the country will start at 1 o'clock Eastern time. West Coast events will start at 3. Night races will start at 7:30, with one exception, the Coca-Cola 600. It will still start at 5:45 Eastern time. Kelly Earnhardt Elledge, Dale Jr.'s sister and president of JR Motorsports, is exploring options that could put Danica Patrick in a limited number of Nationwide Series races next season. If the deal gets done, Patrick would split time with Jr. and some other drivers in the 5 car in 2010. Michael Waltrip is also interested in bringing Danica to NASCAR. He gave her a tour of Michael Waltrip Racing and says he's interested in talking to her about her potential NASCAR plans. And those are the racing headlines on the Race Report. Coming up on this edition of the Race Report, Tony closes the gap on the points leaders. We'll look at the standings after Kansas with seven races to go. Now we'll know when each race is going to start. NASCAR going to uniform start times, and they're much earlier.
Thank goodness.
I'm liking it. So Jimmy and Mark were not cheating at Dover, but NASCAR warned them anyway, and then took their Kansas cars back to the R&D Center to check them as well. Danica and Dale Jr. on the same NASCAR team? Could happen.
Go Daddy.
And we will preview the Pepsi 500 coming up this weekend at Auto Club Speedway, formerly known as California Speedway. I think it's still in California. All that and more coming up when we come back on the Race Report.
It happens on the track or off. Steve and Sam know about it. You're listening to the Race Report.
And welcome back to the Race Report as we wrap up the race at Kansas Speedway, just right over there.
Wasn't it nice to go cover a race and be able to come home and sleep in your own bed?
Yeah, it was fun being there. It was a great weekend. It started off kind of nasty and cold and windy.
Oh man, did it ever.
It was a beautiful, just perfect day on Sunday for racing. Stands were packed out there at Kansas Speedway, and
something that kind of surprised me a little bit.
We saw, and we talked a lot about it before the race. You and I were out there together, and we were a little concerned about how Sunday was going to shape up, because what really had me nervous was the week before at Dover. Dover, by NASCAR standards, Dover's not a huge venue. It's much smaller than Kansas. I don't believe it seats anywhere close to what Kansas does. And there were a lot of empty seats at Dover.
Yeah, there
were. A lot of them. And it was full for the nationwide race at Kansas on Saturday. And there were a few empty seats sprinkled around, but pretty
Not
much a
many.
Full house, and it was packed. I couldn't see an empty seat on Sunday out there for the Price Chopper 400.
Great.
It was a great day. Did you ever get your computer working there?
I did. We're ready to go.
You ready to go?
Absolutely.
All right. Let's take a look and see where your favorite driver finished in the Price Chopper 400 at Kansas.
And your winner was somebody besides Jimmy Johnson. Tony Stewart picked up the victory.
Didn't look that way for a while.
No, it didn't. Jeff Gordon was second. Greg Biffle third. Fourth was Juan Montoya. Fifth, Denny Hamlin. Sixth, Casey Kane. Seventh, Mark Martin. Eighth, David Rudeman. He messed up the party for the Chasers. Ninth, Jimmy Johnson. 10th, Carl Edwards.
11th was Kurt Busch. Kyle Busch was 12th. Brad Keselowski, 13th. 14th, Marcus Ambrose. 15th, Casey Mears. Martin Truex Jr., 16th. 17th to A.J. Allmendinger. Sam Hornish Jr. was 18th. 19th, Bill Elliott. 20th, Elliott Sadler.
21st, Clint Bowyer. 22nd, Ryan Newman. 23rd, Jeff Burton. 24th, Kevin Harvick. 25th, David Strimme. Reed Sorensen was 26th. Scott Speed, 27th. Joey Logano, 28th. 29th, Eric Darnell, 30th, Paul Menard.
Jamie McMurray was 31st after running much better than that. Max Pappas, 32nd, 33rd, John Andretti, Robbie Gordon, 34th, 35th, David Reagan, Dale Earnhardt Jr., 36th, engine problems, 37th, Brian Vickers, he's the first one that absolutely, forget about it, he's done for the chase.
It's done, it's over.
Michael Waltrip was 38th, 39th,
he's done,
Matt
over.
Kenseth, 40th, Dave Blaney, I don't think he's got much of a shot either. Mike Bliss, 41st, 42nd, Joe Nemechek, and Bobby Labonte was caught up in that early accident on last. Only went six laps, and
that was a pretty
43rd,
pretty bad wreck for that early in a race.
It was, you know, that seems to happen a lot at Kansas. I remember the very first year, first race, had a wreck on lap two.
Yeah,
and I mean, it seems like it's been like that. There have been a lot of early accidents.
And this was the second caution of the race at lap six.
Yeah, there was Joey Logano spun by himself.
Spun by himself.
On lap two.
It was lap two. Yeah.
So yeah, it got off to kind of a shaky start. But Kansas is 9 years old now. This was the 10th year of racing there. Eighth year. Next year will be they'll celebrate their 10 years being open. 2001 was the first race. And what I'm getting at is they haven't touched the pavement. Drivers like it now. You can race pretty much all up and down the racetrack.
They kind of like it now.
Yeah. Well, Jeff Gordon told me he loved it. He said he loved it. And Greg Biffle has said that he really likes it. But the one thing I like, even though the track is getting worn and it's getting bumpier, and the drivers will tell you it's getting character, and you can't see it on the radio, but I'm making my air quotes with my fingers here. Character.
He is.
It's still not abrasive to the point that you can't make a two-tire stop and win the race with it. And Tony Stewart did that on Sunday.
Greg Biffle should have.
Greg Biffle wishes he had. Although it looked like a few more laps, they didn't have a few more laps, so it doesn't matter now, but a few more laps, Jeff Gordon might have made four tires work, although I don't know. He looked like he got to a certain point and couldn't get any closer to score.
I think it was the same story with this car. Catching him is
Aero-tight.
One thing. Passing him is another.
Well, not that I'm name-dropping or anything, but I actually heard with my own ears Jeff Gordon come up to Tony Stewart in Victory Lane and tell him that he just
a name-dropper.
He just got too tight. That was he said he just got too tight there in the closing laps and probably certainly was
aero. How did
you
get in Victory Lane?
I don't know. I snuck in there.
Skulked in there.
They didn't throw me out. But Jeff came in to congratulate Tony, and Tony said, "What happened to you?" And he said, I just got too tight." And I think you're right. I think even with this car, aero push is still too much of an issue, especially at a high-speed track like Kansas where the corners are relatively flat, only 15 degrees of banking there. And so Jeff not able to hold the nose down and get the pass on Tony Stewart. So it was a good race there at the end, but Gordon really, really never threatened him. I mean, Stewart was in pretty good shape, even with the two tires, but Gordon did do a good job to get up to second place. Another good run, a good run for Greg Biffle. He had not really been heard from in the chase so far. And, man, between Jimmy Johnson first and then Biffle in the middle of the race, were they stinking it up.
Oh, my goodness.
I think Biffle had like an 8-second lead at one point.
Yeah, at one point it was just...
He had a full straightaway on the second-place car, and Jimmy Johnson had a lead nearly that big early on. And early on when Johnson was running away from everybody, I'm like, oh, man, here we go. We don't need the 48 car checked out early in the race. But I'll tell you what, and again... This car, maybe, but once he got back in traffic, Jimmy Johnson I'm talking about, that was just another car. I mean, they fell back. Some other guys made two tire stops. They took four, and that dropped them back to seventh or eighth place, I believe, at that time, and he couldn't make up any ground at all.
I can't remember who. I read this somewhere, and somebody said this during the broadcast, and I don't remember who it was, but they said That 48 car likes four fresh tires and clean air, and he ain't got either one right now.
Yeah.
And it was very, I mean, he couldn't do anything once he got back there in the pack. And I say the pack, he was in
yeah,
eighth, ninth,
he never
10th.
Was very far back, back in traffic.
He couldn't pass anybody.
And then Biffle did the same thing. Once Biffle got out in clean air, he was gone. And I mean, even to a bigger lead than Jimmy Johnson had. And I literally was sitting there watching the race, almost dozing off at that point. Because, I mean, there was really no racing going on anywhere. Fortunately, things kind of worked out to where it tightened up at the end. But there for a while, it was there. There was a stretch where when Biffle had his huge lead there, I think it was Gordon, Johnson, Casey Kane, and I can't remember who else. I think Montoya. Those guys really battling for like fifth spot.
The four of them were just dicing
all over the track, and that was some pretty exciting stuff there. So, I mean, there was some good racing going on, just not up the front at that time.
How snake bit does Dale Earnhardt Jr. think he is this year? Because it looked like early on that he was going to be a contender all day long.
Well,
and then what happens?
He got out front, and he set sail. He built a pretty big lead early in the race. So, all right, stick around. Lots more to talk about the Price Chopper 400 at Kansas Speedway, and a lot going on this week. So stick around. We're just getting started here on the Race Report.
If you want NASCAR talk, you've come to the right place. You're listening to the Race Report.
Welcome back to the Race Report. Steve Parker along with Sam Atwell. Thanks so much for joining us. It's counting down. Three races down, seven to go to crown the 2009 Sprint Cup Championship. It is now a race. Tony Stewart
exactly
is back in it.
Which was the first thought in my mind when Jimmy Johnson was out in front of that pack is like, oh, the chase is over. He's gonna leave Kansas with a 150-200 point lead.
Well,
but no, it didn't happen.
Didn't work out that way. Jimmy Johnson, again, as we talked about last segment, Jimmy Johnson was untouchable out front in clean air, but once some guys two-tired him, and he was out there with four tires in about eighth, ninth place, he couldn't get back to the front. Could not get back to the front. Never did.
Never did
the race again. And then Greg Biffle drove out to a huge lead, and then he decided to go with four tires. He did. His crew chief, Greg Irwin, wanted to take two tires. Greg Biffle wanted four, and the driver won out in that discussion, and it cost him. And we'll hear Biffle later on say that it was his fault. It was his call to take four, and that probably cost him the race. You know, you never know. Sometimes a car likes four fresh tires better than others. Jeff Gordon did pretty well there at the end of the race taking four.
Yes, he did.
Looked like that might win him the race, but he could not quite run down Tony Stewart. Stewart got out to too big a lead. Mark Martin finishes seventh. He is still the points leader, hanging in there now for 3 weeks. 18-point gap over Jimmy Johnson, who finished ninth. So Mark just finished two positions ahead of Jimmy, but does gain 8 points on him. Juan Montoya, the only driver to have a top-five finish in all three chase races.
I'm telling you, keep an eye on that team.
I thought he was going to win. I thought there at one point in the race, if he could get out front, That would have been over, and even if he'd fallen back at places, I thought for a long time in that race he had the best car. But man, they continue. He didn't think so. I was listening to some of the audio. Did you hear any of that between he and his crew chief?
I did.
Oh man, it was very beep laden. There were a lot of expletives, and Juan was not happy with the car. But I'll tell you what, I loved it. The crew chief, Brian Patty, is his crew chief, and I mean he was giving it right back to him. It was good stuff. If you have a chance to check track pass, maybe Montoya would be a very entertaining driver to listen to from here on.
Jeff Gordon was rather animated on Sunday, too.
He admitted that in the post race. He said that he was pretty bad on the radio.
I listened to him quite a bit, and it was probably about the worst I've ever heard
from him. Was it PG-13?
It was probably R.
Juan Montoya definitely was as well, and he just basically told his driver, told his crew chief that the car was a piece of bleep and that they needed to fix it. And Patty just kept telling him, just calm down. He said, just focus on what you're doing. We're doing fine. And he said, well, you're not bleeping driving this piece of bleep and bleep, bleep, bleep. And then Patty says to him, no, that's what you get paid for. And he said,
this sounds like us.
Yeah. It was classic stuff. You can still go on to NASCAR.com and catch that on there. But so he was not happy with his car, but still, he's the only driver with a top five finish in all three chase races so far.
You look at his season overall, and now he is quietly, and just I don't know how this happens with some guys, but he now has 15 top 10s.
Yeah.
Which is, and it's just been.
Well, look at this. Three top fives in a row now. He only has five top fives on the season.
Yeah.
And but he's been top five ever since the chase started. You know, we talked about it, Sam, as we were closing in on the chase, that they were absolutely just points racing. They were playing it conservative, not taking any chances. I'm certain that he could have scored some more top fives, maybe even a win or two.
If they had been aggressive.
Yeah, if they'd have been a little more aggressive and maybe had a more solid chase position locked in, and he could have gone for some wins. Because, I mean, look at the way he is running now. He's only 51 points back. As I mentioned earlier, Tony Stewart jumps one spot. He's fourth now, and suddenly he's only 67 points back and certainly a threat after his win. Kurt Busch slips a little bit. He's in fifth place now, but still 91 points back. Denny Hamlin, 99 points behind. Then Jeff Gordon does move up one spot to seventh, but he's 103 back. Greg Biffle, 114. Then it's pretty much see you next year. Ryan Newman, 164 out in ninth place. 10th, Carl Edwards, 165. 11th, Casey Kane at minus 190. And Brian Vickers,
way done.
Yeah, 250 back after
a couple of
rough weeks for Brian Vickers. He's had some trouble the last
picked
two
him to get in
races.
And what's he do? Nothing.
Doesn't it seem to be that way about every year?
The guy
that's the big story getting in, Jeremy Mayfield a few years ago, and I've seen some other guys. The guy that's the big story getting in, there's all the excitement, and then it's like, nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah,
yep.
And as soon as they're in there, they hang on to that 12th spot. Probably the biggest surprise, I think, still among the chase drivers, Carl Edwards, that not only won nine races last year, no victories this year, and I'm trying to think back. I don't remember him even really coming close.
I don't think so.
He probably, it seems to me, I think he probably had the best car at Texas. And they made a little misstep on pit road that dropped him back a few spots, and then Gordon won it. But he probably had a winning car at Texas and was leading late, had the last caution not come out there. He'd have won that race. But that's it. Other than that, I don't remember him really being a threat to win. And he is, he's, you know, not been horrible in the chase, but bad enough that he's pretty much out of it. It's going to take a miracle for him to make up 165 points and climb over nine guys.
That's the trouble. That's the trouble. There's so many guys between him and the leaders that it's tough to jump over that many to, you know, make any headway. And, you know, we're not really seeing, other than Brian Vickers, nobody's really had horrible.
Well, Casey Kane.
Casey Kane blew up
at New Hampshire, and that
but
pretty much dropped him.
But other than that, the rest of the guys have done pretty well.
Been solid. Jeff Gordon hurt himself with just a 15th place finish at New Hampshire. You know, he's been trying to claw his way back from that and continues. He did pretty much all he could do last week. You know, obviously winning is what you can do. But, I mean, he beat Mark Martin, beat Jimmy Johnson, beat the guys that were ahead of him except for Tony Stewart. So he did gain some ground, but not a lot.
I think he's in a lot better position because he's closed the gap on the guys right in front of him.
And we'll talk a lot more about that when we come back. Because again, I had a chance to talk to Jeff Gordon over the weekend, and I'll tell you what he had to say about that. So don't tell him that. Stick around. Coming back with more on the second half of the Race Report.
It happens on the track or off. Steve and Sam know about it. You're listening to the Race Report.
And welcome back to the Race Report. Steve Parker along with Sam Atwell coming out of your radio. And you can also find us online 24-7, 365 days a year at RaceReportRadio.com.
Radio.com. Great new stuff going on there. We have video highlights running all the time there. Go get your Race Report update every day from my partner, Steve Parker. It's brilliant, insightful.
What?
Information.
Oh, yeah. I probably should do one of those this week.
Oh.
Forgot again. Ooh, sorry.
Well, we have pre-race videos, guys talking about how they're going to do it. California? No, it's
Auto Club Speedway.
Auto Club
in
Speedway.
Fontana, California. Formerly known as California Speedway, which I still call it pretty much all the time, but it's now officially Auto Club Speedway.
But have the guys up there talking about how they think they're going to do there. We always have post-race comments. We have pre-race comments. We have stuff that happens during the week. It's a great place. Go on there. It's just concise. I'm telling you, if you want to look smart at work and talk racing with your buddies, you got to go to racereportradio.com before you go to work, and then you will be brilliant just like we are.
You might want to aim a little bit higher than that. But anyway, Tony Stewart was your winner in the Price Chopper 400 presented by Kraft.
Yes,
I said that
good.
An awful lot over the weekend. But he talks about that decision by Darian Grubb late in the race to take those two tires, and that was the winning call.
The good thing was we got two tires at the end there, and Darian made a great call getting two, and the guys had an awesome stop. I mean, that was really what it boiled down to. We got that track position at the end, and we had the luxury of being able to pick the inside or outside lane on the restart, and I kind of debated back and forth which side I needed to be on, but I kind of struggled when I was stuck on the bottom on restarts today. So, took a gamble and went to the top and got enough of a lead on Casey to get down to the bottom by the time we got to 1 and 2 and was able to run our line, and we got enough of a gap right off the bat that, it gave me the flexibility to run my own line, run my own pace, and let those guys have to worry about catching us.
And they were not able to catch him. Tony Stewart picks up his fourth win of the year at Kansas. He also goes on to say that, as if we didn't know this already, chase competition's kind of tight. And Tony says, you just can't have a bad day.
You know, it shows how competitive this chase is. I mean, guys that were up front there had average days, and a lot of guys closed on them today. So, it just shows that you're going to have to be on for 10 weeks to win this thing. And if you have a bad day, there's going to be guys that are going to capitalize on it.
Well, and what I think, obviously, you can't have a bad day. That's evident. But I still think, and we've talked about this before, Mark Martin, Jimmy Johnson, Tony Stewart now have very race victories here in the first 3 weeks of the chase. I don't think you can win the chase without winning at least one race.
You need to win a race.
I don't think, even though Montoya is hanging in there right now because he's the only driver to be top five in all three races, I think ultimately you're not going to see a guy win this chase without winning a race or two. I really think that.
We just got to go back to 2006.
2007.
Or 7, when Gordon
had the 30 top 10s and still couldn't beat Jimmy Johnson because Jimmy Johnson won four races in the chase and Jeff only won one. But I think you're going to have to get victories in the chase, and that's what's going to do it. But Tony Stewart has his, and now he's back in chase contention just like that. And the thing is, the extra bonus points you get for winning a race can really be key because Mark Martin and Jimmy Johnson didn't finish that far behind him, but he still made up quite a bit of ground, only 67 points now behind Mark Martin.
He nearly cut the deficit in half.
Yeah, and Mark only finished 7th. It's not like Mark finished 40th. I mean, that just goes – I mean, it is still really important to get that race win, and I think you are going to have to do that to win the championship. Jeff Gordon had a good, strong day. Early on, wasn't looking so good, but he said his team hung in there and got the car good at the end.
It was definitely a strong finish. We really struggled at the beginning of this race. I was pretty disappointed that the car was doing the things that it did, and I'm really, really proud of this team and Steve for not giving up. I mean, I was a bear on the radio because I was so mad about it, and we just never gave up on it. We kept tuning on it, and Steve made some great adjustments, and we had great pit stops, and found ourselves in position there at the end with some guys with two tires to take advantage of it. So to come back and finish second is certainly a great, great day for us.
It was a good points day for them, but he didn't gain that much ground. He's still 102 points behind leader Mark Martin. Greg Biffle, dominant in the middle of the race, but he decided to make that call for four tires at the end and kind of wished he hadn't.
And feels good, because, a lot of the company-wide, we ran pretty good today. McMurray did, and we did. I see Carl finished 10th, so I know Matt was running well before he had an engine problem. So it was just it's a good day for our company today and a good day for us. I feel bad at the end. I wanted to take four tires, and crew chief wanted to take two, and I decided to. I wanted four, and probably the wrong thing to do.
It was the wrong thing to do because you didn't win.
Yeah.
You didn't win. The guy that took two tires won, Greg, in case you weren't noticing. So that definitely was not the right call. Mark Martin comes out with a points lead, 18 points, still a slim margin, but he does actually gain a little bit on second place Jimmy Johnson, and he says it just didn't quite get it right, but the team fought hard.
We didn't quite have it nailed down. Our car was just a little bit off of some of the guys out there, and our race team fought really hard, and we fought for everything we got today. It was a great effort, and it was actually a very good result based on missing it just a little bit.
But again, only a seventh place finish, that's not bad. Most weeks you will take that and be happy, but
absolutely.
Tony Stewart getting the win, gained quite a bit of ground on points leader Mark Martin. But Mark goes to California Speedway, Auto Club Speedway, in Fontana, California, track virtually identical to Michigan, where Mark won just a few weeks back. So would expect Mark to be strong this weekend out in Fontana as well. Stick around. When we come back, we'll talk about this warning that NASCAR issued to the six. How far back am I going? Mark drove the six.
Wow.
The 5 car and the 48 car with Hendrick Motorsports. Kind of a weird thing that had a lot of buzz going on last weekend in Kansas. That's coming up when we come back on the Race Report.
can almost smell the hot oil and burnt rubber through the radio. Or maybe that's just Steve and Sam. You found the race report.
You know, producer Paul, man who pushes the buttons and turns the knobs, keeps this show on the air, keeps us in line.
He's like the pilot. He is.
He's flying the plane over there. He's not the biggest NASCAR fan. He's learned a lot as he's been hanging around us, of course. But of the three of us, I think he would agree easily he's the least knowledgeable on this. But he comes up with some brilliant points, I think, sometimes.
Yes, he does.
Don't tell him I said that. I don't want him to know that. But what we're going to talk about now is this kind of weird thing that happened last weekend. And it came out that the cars of the five team and the 48 team were taken back to the R&D center back in Charlotte from Dover. These are the Dover cars. Remember those? Jimmie Johnson dominated and won the race. And Mark Martin, I think, finished in the top five at Dover. And, of course, he had won the week before at New Hampshire. So these are your top two in points. They take those cars back to the R&D center at Dover, and apparently...
Not unusual.
It's
a regular thing they do.
I guess it is. I don't know that anybody really knew that until this week we started asking more questions about it. And I said R&D center in Dover. They took it back to the R&D center in Charlotte. But then it comes out that those two teams were warned that they weren't cheating. The cars were not out of tolerance, but very, very close to being so. So close that they advised them not to bring those cars back in their current configuration to a racetrack again, because they said it's so close that if you bring them back again and the measurements maybe change slightly, you guys could be in violation. Paul, our producer, brings up the great point. Why would they even bother to tell them that? Why would they tell them you're close to cheating? And why would they, if you want to let the teams know, okay. But why, and I mean, again, we were at the Speedway last week. There was a press release put out about it. You may have seen it on NASCAR.com. It was a pretty big deal. I mean, it was definitely announced to everybody that this warning had been handed down to the 48 and the 5 teams. Why make it so public and make such an issue of it? And then Jimmie Johnson was left to defend his teams. We didn't cheat. We didn't do anything wrong. The cars were legal, and they were. They didn't cheat. There was nothing illegal about them. And yet, suddenly, they're under the glare of the spotlight again as if they're cheating. And, of course, with Chad Knaus's reputation, that being he has been suspended and fined before for pushing the rule book a little bit. I mean, obviously, everybody immediately starts yelling, cheating Chad, again. But there was nothing illegal about the cars. They were just close. So, I mean, what was going on with this, Sam? What's your take on this whole situation? It was just bizarre, I thought.
Well, two things. I talked to a crew chief on Sunday out at the Speedway, and he said if Chad were cheating in the chase, he's an idiot.
He's not.
There's too much to lose.
25-point loss, which is what will happen if you're just, you know, a quarter inch over height or under height or something in post-race inspection. Typically now it's become standard to lose 25 points. You lose 25 points when you're in championship contention. That can kill you.
He did say, in the regular season, do you push the limits? He said, we all do.
Mm-hmm.
We all do. It's not, but he said in the chase, Chad's not going to do that. He's too smart. He's too good a crew chief to even come close.
Right.
My opinion is, this was an attempt. And I hate conspiracy theories. I hate them. I hate them. I hate them.
I know.
But I think this might have been an attempt to distract the 48 and the 5 team from the bang-up job they're doing in the chase.
Maybe kind of maybe reel them in just a little bit, possibly, so they don't pull out ahead and
render
the chase kind of pointless because they're
both
out front.
What else makes sense? Because we get to the Speedway this weekend. What is Jimmie Johnson talking about? He's not talking about how well the team's playing. Talking about winning. He's not talking about anything else. He's having to defend this warning they got because they were too close to the tolerances. This was just an idiotic move by NASCAR. I'm sorry. Okay, you're almost cheating.
Yeah.
You're almost cheating. And we're going to spank you if you're getting closer.
It's like Paul said to us, you know, he goes, why even bring it up and make it public? If they want to let the teams know, hey, and I mean, I think it's good that NASCAR says, look, you know, you guys are close. Just letting you know, you're right on the edge. If you go any further or if maybe our measurements are off a little bit, I would suggest you don't bring those cars back. Privately let the teams know, but this became a huge public thing, a huge deal.
Well,
and it's all anybody was talking about.
John Darby came out and said, well, we warn teams all the time. Well, then how come there's not a press release
heard about it before?
All the time?
We never heard them talking about it like this.
Why is it not out in the media all the time if you do it all the time?
It does.
Why was this one handled differently?
It does seem a little premeditated. It does seem a little premeditated that there was maybe an ulterior motive here to making such a public spectacle of it. Because, yeah, like you say, Jimmy Johnson was asked about pretty much nothing else early in the race weekend than what's going on with this, morning.
You don't want to fire up the 48 team.
No. No.
You really, if that was the intent, was to
we want a good chase. Don't give them any extra motivation.
If the intent was to make them lose focus and rile them up a little bit,
well, see, that's the thing, too.
Because this team could put together, you know, they've won four in a row once. They could do it again and even maybe five in a row.
That's the thing. That's the one problem I have maybe with your theory, although it does make sense. I just can't see that NASCAR would think that something like that would distract them. Because if anything, it might focus them more, make them more determined. And it certainly looked early in the race when Jimmy Johnson was just about to lap the field that maybe that was exactly what they had accomplished, was just making them mad and making them maybe even more determined to get out there and really put a whooping on the field. And it looked early on like they were going to do that. Fortunately, that didn't happen. Fortunately, from a standpoint of keeping the chase a little bit closer. You know, we were talking last week that it seemed like it was kind of getting out of hand already. I think this is the first year, and I don't have this in front of me, I should have gotten this up, but I do remember reading earlier this week that this is, I believe, the only time in the chase, or maybe since the first year, that as many as six teams, which is what we have now, have been within 100 points of the lead. The last couple of years, it had only been three. After four races, only three teams were in within 100 points of the lead. So it is a little bit tighter this year than it's been in past seasons. So it's... you know, it's still pretty tight. And, yeah, six drivers are within 100 points of the lead. So, you know, and Jimmy Johnson, Mark Martin, just a little stumble. These other guys are in position to really make up some ground in a hurry and maybe even pull ahead of them. So we'll see what happens. But it was a bizarre situation, and it's all anybody was talking about, especially Friday and Saturday at Kansas Speedway last weekend. So who knows? And they took their cars back to they took their Kansas cars back at the R&D Center, measured them. They were off. They were fine. No problems there. All right, stick around. Coming back with more on the race report after this.
Want NASCAR talk? You've come to the right place. You're listening to the Race Report.
And welcome back to the Race Report. Something else I want to talk about before we get into it. We're almost done here.
Wow.
We have too much show for an hour. It is the case again. Real quick, wanted to touch on this announcement this week that Brian France made and some of the other big shots from the networks that the uniform start times of races next year.
Oh,
races,
I'm loving this.
Eastern and central regions of the country. 1 o'clock Eastern time. Now they say with invocation, that's what time they'll come on with the last of the pre-race stuff, the invocation, the national anthem. So probably be more like 1:15 to 1:20 when the actual green flag starts. But I mean, 1 o'clock is when the race basically starts. Eastern, central regions, and then the West Coast races like we have this week will be 3 o'clock starts, like the week, the race this weekend.
So on the East Coast, races, then the pre-race show will start about 8:30 in the morning.
I think so. They might even start it on Saturday night. Before that. But so the thing is, and you know, and that's great. I think everybody's
going to.
I love the fact that we're going to have a set start time. I love the fact that it's noon central time for us.
Oh, yes.
Because that's what I used to like. I mean, that's, you know,
rocks.
I love the NFL. You know, here in the central part of the country, you know, the first game's at noon. You know, the next game's at 3:15. I mean, you just know that. And now that's the way NASCAR is going to be. And
that's,
I think everybody's
awesome.
Happy about that. No more of this trying to push the start times back later and later to bump into prime time to help the ratings.
Well,
I think
that
NASCAR,
hasn't worked out so
it has
well
not
for
worked
them.
Out. And the ratings have been slipping. And I think that's, they finally have woke up and thought, you know what? A lot of fans have been saying this for years. Maybe we should listen to them and do it.
That's a great move by NASCAR.
I think it is as well. Real quick, let's go ahead and get to the race weekend. Weather forecasts are going to be out in California. It's got to be sunny, right? Here's meteorologist Dan Holliday.
Hey, Steve and Sam, we're going west this weekend, and after a picture-perfect race day in Kansas last weekend, you think we can get 2 weeks in a row like that? Yes, high pressure has moved into California, and in fact, the entire weekend looks like we should get every event in without a hitch. At the Green Flag in Fontana on Sunday afternoon, we've got sunshine in store, 75 degrees, wind southwesterly at 5 to 10 miles per hour. I'm meteorologist Dan Holliday on the Race Report.
What would you expect at California?
It
other
never
than
rains
perfect
in
weather.
Southern California.
It's got to be perfect weather in California, and sounds like it will be again this weekend. Thanks, Dan. Well, heading out to California. Auto Club. I still want to say California Speedway. It's not. It's Auto Club Speedway in Fontana, California. That, of course, is just a little bit east of Los Angeles, about 30 miles or so.
In the chase for the first time.
That's right. It is in the it is part of the chase for the first time. And, in fact, how much time do we have there, Producer Paul? Give me time signals. Okay. Well,
was
you know
that,
what?
How much?
That was,
what was he telling you? You're number one?
I think so. I think I'm number one. He's got a nice manicure on that finger as well. Real quick, let's hear from Danny Hamlin talking about the fact that he likes the switch California and Atlanta have made.
I like the switch. I think it helped both racetracks quite a bit. I think it's going to be good for both of them. We've already seen that it's helped Atlanta. I've never seen that much excitement during an Atlanta race ever, as long as I can remember. So it definitely helped that racetrack. And as far as California, I think the weather will be better. It won't be so hot out there. And it's a good racetrack. To have a two-mile racetrack spread out like that, it's going to be a good chase race. I think it'll, you know, the good cars are going to run up front like they usually do, and you know, the chance of you having a, you know, getting caught up in a wreck is a little bit less there.
All right, Danny Hamlin with thoughts on making that switch of dates between Atlanta and California now that California is part of the chase. So we will see what happens. Who's your pick? We're almost out of time. Who's your pick at California?
Jeff Gordon.
Jeff Gordon. Jimmy Johnson.
You weenie. What a sellout.
I know, but I just, I'm telling you, until somebody beats them, they're the ones to beat. All right, whatever happens, we will wrap it up with you next week here on The Race Report, and be sure and check out racereportradio.com. Thanks. Have a great week.
Good job, guys. Woo! All you guys done a heck of a job.